Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. My name is Dan Mott, and we thank you once again for listening to us this week. Guys, training camp has begun for the Chicago Bears as rookies reported to Bourbonnais earlier this week. And back with us is executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish. Hub, of course, the voice of the Chicago Bears from 1985 to 2006. Hub, are you ready for the Bears season to kick off?
Well, ready for the NFL season to kick off, and of course the Bears come along with that. I think Bob might echo this extra week isn't the greatest thing that's ever happened. You know, I am thrilled for Brian Urlacher being inducted into the Hall of Fame, and because he and Ray Lewis are both going in, the league saw fit to put the Ravens and the Bears in the Hall of Fame game. That puts them in camp basically a week earlier than anybody else, or at least a week earlier than the Bears have been going for the last decade or two. So it's, you know, what is always a long preseason is going to seem even longer. Some of these stories are going to get beat to death. But at the end of the day, you know, even after over 40 years on the beat, football is the best game going. It's my favorite. And we're ready to get going again. And so, yeah, very excited to be headed to Bourbonnais this week.
And I think fans will be happy to know that it's about two more weeks until football's back on TV. So that's an exciting thing to think about. Also back with us today is 28-year Bears beat reporter, veteran, and each and every day we're happy to have him on our Pro Football Weekly team. Of course, I'm talking about the one and only Bob Laguerre. Bob, how excited are you for Bears football to be starting up?
Well, Dan, you have to temper the drudgery of training camp, as Hub alluded to, and that's a definite thing, probably more for the players than for us, but there really is a lot to be excited about this year. I don't know how much better the Bears are going to be. I would guess a couple of games, maybe three games better, but I think they'll be infinitely more interesting to watch with Mitch Trubisky finally having some NFL-caliber weapons to work with, working in an offense that is not from four decades ago, and just with more playmakers and more guys who can create things and open things up for other players. I think you're going to see Jordan Howard have a bounce-back year, because teams know now that the Bears will be able to fall, unlike last year when they weren't able to do it. And Jordan Howard, I don't think he had a bad year, but had a down year compared to his rookie season. So I think the moves that Ryan Pace has made in the offseason make this offense better across the board.
Well, guys, last week we previewed the defense, and before we get started, some big news heading into camp, and that is the deal has not been yet made with Roquan Smith, the rookie linebacker drafted in round one of the 2018 NFL draft. Bob, do they get a deal made here, perhaps even as we tape, or do you think that this is going to take a while?
No, I think it's going to come down. It's imminent. Everybody forgets last year that Mitch Trubisky didn't sign until July 19th, which is tomorrow. Now, the difference is the Bears are starting camp a week earlier than they did last year. So there is a little bit of a sense of urgency to get Roquan Smith in camp, especially because this is a guy, when you use the number 8 overall pick on a player like that, you expect him to contribute from day one. If he misses any significant time in training camp, that makes it more difficult for him to be the opening day starter. I don't see that happening. I don't want to say they're arguing over nickels and dimes and things like that, but they're talking about the fourth-year option where teams can recoup money if they cut a guy and he signs with somebody else so the player isn't allowed to double-dip. But I can't believe that's an issue, because if you use the number 8 pick on a guy, which the Bears did, and as much as they talked him up, the fact that you might cut him in year 4 shouldn't even enter the equation, shouldn't even enter anybody's mindset. You know, get a deal done. This is a team that cannot afford any bad PR after 4 straight last place finishes in the NFC North. So whatever it takes in the Bears' end, get this thing done and get this guy in camp on time.
Hub, as the agent and the team works these negotiations out, does this make a player like Roquan Smith, or really any other player waiting on a rookie player waiting on a contract, does this make them nervous heading into camp?
Well, you know, you can't speak to each individual's mindset, Dan, but I would say probably not. Having gotten to spend some time with Roquan Smith over the last couple months, he strikes me as a particularly bright and mature young man, even if he's only 21 years old. And so I don't think he's terribly concerned about it. I don't think the Bears are terribly concerned about it. I don't think fans should be. As Bob alluded to, this is about language in the contract that will probably never be relevant. And yet it's a storm that was sparked by Joey Bosa last year with his prolonged holdout over this particular issue, this fourth-year option. He was the first-rounder to really test it. There have been varying reports as to whether Bosa had alternative motives in his contract holdout. But now, after he does it, you've got seven of the top 10 picks, at least as of when we started taping, all unsigned, and pretty much all for the same reason. So I think Bob makes an excellent point, and I alluded to it at the top. The Bears are going to camp a full week earlier than usual. That's part of the issue here. Otherwise, it most likely would have been worked out. I don't think that I think this is much ado about nothing, and I don't think Bears fans should worry about it. The money is pretty much locked in by the salary cap and the rookie pool and by the slotting that they do with these draft choices. And so there's no reason not to get this done if the player wants to be with the team that is trying to sign him and if the team that drafted him has no regrets. And we know both of those things are true. So I strongly suspect that by the time we meet on Thursday, depending on when folks are listening to this, then it may have already happened. But I'll tell you that we're taping a day early. My guess is this gets done before Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy meet the media at noon on Thursday. And if not, then certainly very shortly thereafter.
Well, we'll keep our eyes on that over at ProFootballWeekly.com. Today, we're looking at the offense and perhaps some special teams as the team gets settled down in Bourbonnais. Hub, how prepared is this offense heading into training camp this season? It seems as though many of these guys continued to build even after minicamps broke. Some of them continued to push themselves in training and looking at that playbook.
Well, you know, when we say how prepared, I guess we would say probably a little better than most teams with a lot of young players because of the benefit of some extra practice time or at least the extra voluntary mini camp because they have a new head coach in Matt Nagy. Other than that, you can only do so much during the off season, as I guess John Fox used to say, with players running around in their underwear, which is kind of what this amounts to. They've got their shorts and their T-shirts on and they're doing timing and, you know, they're practicing the routes and getting their footwork set and everything else. But at the end of the day, they have not tried to play this offense at full speed. And I think what Bears fans need to understand is they won't play this offense at full speed until that Hall of Fame game against the Ravens, because even what they do in training camp, they don't go out and play tackle football, you know. And so it takes some time. Now, if we're asking how mentally prepared is this offense in terms of what they've learned and absorbed, with all the new terminology, all the new language, all the new formations. I'm impressed, Bob, with what I've seen of Matt Nagy so far and his staff. I'm very impressed by Mark Helfrich. I thought Dave Ragone was the right choice of the offensive guy to retain on that staff to continue his work with Mitch Trubisky. So, you know, Bob, my guess is that they're probably in pretty good shape heading into camp. But again, this is a long process, and it's going to take well into the season before they've really got this down.
Yeah, and the key, Hub, is how well does Mitch Trubisky know this offense? And everything we've heard from Mitch Trubisky and read about Mitch Trubisky is that this guy leaves no stone unturned. He's very well prepared, way more mature than his years would dictate. This guy has been studying, has been working in the offseason. I heard him say he took a couple days off to visit family and friends back in North Carolina and back in Ohio. And other than that, he's all about learning this offense and learning it to the point where he can tell every single player on the field where they're supposed to be on every single play. He said he practices saying out loud the plays to himself so that when he gets in the huddle, it comes out smoothly. There's no indecisiveness in his play. And I think that's the key, because we've seen quarterbacks in Chicago in the past that maybe weren't the hardest workers in the offseason or away from the field or in the classroom. Mitch Trubisky is different than that. Mitch Trubisky, I think, is doing everything he can to be the franchise quarterback. He knows the position that he's in and how important it is that he succeed, how important it is to the franchise, and I think he's doing everything he possibly can to be prepared and to take a huge step in year two.
Bob, we've talked about it for several months now, this excitement surrounding Matt Nagy. How do you think he'll handle this first training camp as a head coach?
Well, I think his enthusiasm is not going to wear off. Players say that it's genuine. He loves the game. He loves to talk about the game. He loves to teach the game. He loves to coach it. He wants to be out there, and he's going to outwork everybody else. It seems like he is going to make sure that these guys are prepared, and you know, maybe they don't have the best talent on paper, and maybe that'll result in another losing season. But I don't think they're going to fail because they're unprepared or because they haven't worked harder than anybody else, or they don't know the playbook, or they don't know what Nagy expects from them. I think that he's been crystal clear about that, and I think that's going to continue. And as Hub mentioned earlier, they had the extra mini camp. They're going to be in training camp for an extra week. They need it because Mitch Trubisky's throwing now to five guys he's never thrown a pass to in a real live NFL football game. And I think they're going to take good advantage of that. I don't see them having a real physical camp. You don't see any of those anymore. But I think they're going to get their work in, and I think they're going to be prepared. And I think, you know, and I wouldn't get discouraged early on because this is a process, learning this new system. The defense will be ready to go from day one. The offense, I think, will be much better in week 16 and week 17 than it will be in week one.
As we start taking a look at the offensive depth chart, Hub, and looking at quarterbacks, you know, we've talked already about Mitch Trubisky and sort of his preparation and how ready he is to take on this leadership role. When we talk about some of his backups, you're looking at Chase Daniel or Tyler Bray. Is there going to be quite a competition there for that second quarterback position?
No, there's no competition. Chase Daniel is the backup quarterback. He is very familiar with Matt Nagy's system, as is Tyler Bray. But Daniel is the proverbial veteran backup in the NFL, the same kind of chops and resume, if you will, of a Josh McCown who stepped in so ably for the Bears a number of years ago. Taylor Bray, you know, he's been around a while, but he's still really just a developmental guy. He's not viewed, I don't think, with the same veteran trust, if you will, the Daniels is. If the Bears needed somebody to start games and be competitive, they'd have every confidence that Chase Daniel could do that, even though he doesn't have the NFL experience to prove it. But even just in terms of logging backup time and experience, Bray has always been either a practice squad or the third or fourth guy on the roster. So I think it's a comfort zone. You know, one of the things that we don't know yet about Nagy is each coach comes with a different philosophy about that third and sometimes even fourth quarterback spot. Mark Trestman and John Fox were very comfortable only having two active quarterbacks over the better part of the last 5 years. Other teams always have, well, I shouldn't say active quarterbacks, you only have two on game day. I'm talking about even on the 53-man roster. The Patriots for years have only had two on the 53-man roster more often than not. Will Matt Nagy want all three on the 53-man roster? I don't think they can get Bray to the practice squad. So I think the better question here, Bob, is whether Bray makes the team or not, not who's two or three. My suspicion is that he will. From what we've seen, I think Nagy's going to be, you know, comfortable carrying three on the 53. But unless I'm missing something, I don't see any real competition for Chase Daniels for that number two spot.
No, I think it's pretty cut and dried. It's Trubisky's the guy. Chase Daniel was there as much as a backup as he is for a coach on the field for Trubisky. He's a guy who can come in and run the offense. He's not tremendously talented, doesn't have a big arm, doesn't have the ideal stature for an NFL quarterback. He's only 6 feet tall. When he was introduced to us up at Hallis Hall, when he took the podium, he looked to me like a college fullback. He was a stocky guy, shorter than you used to see him from a quarterback. But I think he's just another instrument that they'll use in you know, bringing along Mitch Trubisky. You mentioned Helfrich, you mentioned Nagy, you mentioned Dave Ragone, all guys who are prioritized developing Trubisky. And Daniel's the guy who's going to be on the field with them. There's questions on the field. You might see between plays during training camp, Mitch Trubisky talking to Chase Daniel, like, you know, what's the read there? Where am I going with the ball in this play? Things like that. Not that Mitch Trubisky is going to need a lot of guidance, but if he does, Chase Daniel is going to be the guy on the field that can help him out. And yeah, Taylor Bray, I think it's, to me, 50-50 that he's on the team when they break camp.
And Dan, one other thing to keep in mind about this subject is that, yes, with Fox, they carried three last year. But that was because there was nowhere to hide Mitch Trubisky. He wanted him on the, he had to be on the 53, but you didn't really plan on playing him early. Mike Glennon was brought in to be your starter, but really had little more experience than Trubisky, and so was not in a position to teach the bonus baby, if you will, because it was all about Trubisky even when Glennon was starting. And that's why Mark Sanchez, even though he was listed at number two, was really number three. He was there almost like a life coach or a mentor for Trubisky. In Chase Daniel, what you have is a guy who can be both a continuing mentor for Trubisky and be that backup quarterback. But at least going into last season, the Bears were a lot more comfortable with Glennon on the field than Sanchez if, in fact, Trubisky wasn't playing, which is where they started. So that was the only reason they broke from Fox's routine of only carrying two. This year with Daniel, you know, probably better suited to play than Sanchez was last year, also bringing that veteran experience. They just may not feel the need to carry a third. So a lot of it's going to be how much Tyler Bray impresses during the preseason and how comfortable we don't really know how comfortable Matt Nagy is if he has to play Chase Daniels. So Bob just nailed it. I'd say it's 50-50 on Bray, but no question that Daniel is number two.
Guys, let's look now at the offensive line. And Bob, what are a few key things to watch with that O-line down at camp?
Well, I think first and foremost, by far the biggest question is Kyle Long. Is he going to be healthy? To me, I'd be shocked if Kyle Long makes it to every practice during training camp. I think he might be a guy who starts slowly, maybe doesn't even work with the team the first week, then is given larger and larger doses of playing time, maybe one day on, one day off. He's coming back from three surgeries since he last played a football game. So he's had a lot of things to rehab. If he's healthy, this is a good offensive line. If he's not healthy, they have major question marks because they still don't know what they're doing with Cody Whitehair and James Daniels in the or even Eric Kush. They want to keep Cody Whitehair at center for the continuity because he worked so well with Trubisky last year. That means moving their second-round pick, James Daniels, from his normal position of center to guard, where he would compete with Eric Kush, whose journeyman has struggled a little bit in the past. And, I don't know if I'd call him a weak link, but he's probably the biggest question mark on that line if he's in the starting lineup. But that'll be an interesting competition. If they do decide James Daniels is going to learn the guard position and be primarily a guard, that competition between James Daniels and Eric Kush is going to be one of the better ones at training camp. And, you know, I think they're hoping that they don't have to move Cody Whitehair back to guard. They know he can do that. But, you know, that's a whole other thing that Trubisky has to acclimate himself to, is taking a snap from a different guy than he did all of last year. So a lot of questions on the offensive line, but it all hinges, I think, on Kyle Long.
You know, it's interesting, guys. I'm not so sure that a best case scenario wouldn't be Kyle only practicing two or three times a week. In addition to my work at Pro Football Weekly, I spend a lot of time on the radio at 670 The Score. I'm sure some of my listeners would say too much time on the radio, but different story for a different time. And one of the things that we do every week during the season is pregame and postgame for the Bears. And my pregame partners, in addition to Dan Pompey, of course, Patrick Manley, who not only a long snapper, but offensive tackle, center, offensive lineman, 16 years in the league. My postgame partners, Olin Krutz and James Big Cat Williams, Pro Bowl offensive lineman for the Bears. And the one thing, or not the one thing, but one of the things that they are unanimous in their analysis of is that Kyle Long, in terms of natural God-given gifts, is an absolute freak. That this guy, if healthy, can step on the football field and be a dominant offensive lineman, whether it's at guard or tackle. He just has the innate ability to play the position. He's fierce. He's an incredible athlete. He's incredibly strong. And so he doesn't need practice. He needs health. So, you know, I think the big issue here all during the offseason and even going into Bourbon A is going to be, what is the best program for Kyle Long to be as close? Because he's not going to be 100%. He had three surgeries during the offseason. Obviously, the biggest concern, the neck surgery, but then you look at the elbow and the hand. What is it going to take for him to be as close to 100% on opening day? Because everybody, even though he's 30 years old, now that's not old by offensive line standards. Everybody I talk to, and I'm talking about guys whose opinions I respect a lot more than my own, guys who've done this at a Pro Bowl level, will tell you that if healthy, Long is fine. So the big issue here, how close is he to 95 to 98% right now? How close will he be on September 8th? It is an absolute key to what the Bears want to do. I, for one, am extremely puzzled as to why they're playing James Daniels at guard and Cody Whitehair at center. Now, I understand Cody Whitehair was an all-rookie center and probably better at that position than he was at guard last year. But mostly, again, it's talking to the same people. A lot of it was because Whitehair was getting flipped back and forth last year and never really got a chance to settle in. I think he probably could be as good or better at guard as he could be at center. But what we do know is that James Daniels was the best center prospect in college coming out this year. And everybody assumed, at least I assumed, that's what he was being drafted for. And yet now this decision to try and make him a guard, which he did a little bit of early in his career at Iowa, but didn't have nearly the success he had at center, just to keep Whitehair there. I'm not convinced that, you know, from a starting or an analysis point of view, that it makes the most sense. I will say this. Harry Hiestand is as respected an offensive line coach as I'm aware of anywhere in football at the pro or college level. Obviously, he's involved in this, and I would take his opinion a lot more seriously than mine. I don't know what his opinion is on this particular subject. He doesn't have carte blanche on these. And so I'm a little confused as to why they've decided they're better off starting Daniels at guard than center.
Yeah, to me, Hub, it's absolutely a head-scratcher. But as you said, I would be surprised if Harry Hiestand didn't have input on this. If Harry Hiestand didn't say, yeah, I think this guy can be a guard. If they didn't seek his advice on this, then they're missing the ball. And they've wasted a great source of knowledge. And the other thing is, maybe Daniels has the qualities to be a guard in the NFL, but I know at the last minicamp, they listed him at 295 pounds. I don't know that there's another starting guard in the NFL that is that light. Now, who knows? Maybe he'll show up at, you know, in Bourbonnais at 315. I'm sure he can put on some weight. Guys that size usually can. And that doesn't mean he's necessarily stronger, but his strength was not one of his attributes coming out of college. He was more of a technician, more of a guy, a smart player. So, it's a lot, I think, to grasp for a kid who's only 20 years old and is now being moved from his natural position to the guard position, where he's going to be facing some guys who have 50-pound weight advantages on him. Not that he wouldn't see some of that at center, but I think, you know, you can live with a 295-pound center. A lot of teams do. I don't know that he plays as a starting NFL guard at 295, though.
Yeah, and a quick point here, Dan. When they went to the combine, Daniels did not blow anybody away on the bench press. So when Bob talks about, it's not that he's not strong, but we talk about these guys in Superman type terms, and you want your offensive lineman to push 225 pounds at least 25 to 30 times. I believe he was under 20. I think he was in the teens. I'd have to go back and check the numbers. But what really is more interesting to me is them laying eyes on him, you know, at rookie camp and in the mini camps. Even though he was only 295, he claimed he was 310 by the time he got to veteran minicamp. I'm not disputing that. I didn't see the scale. But what is clear about him, which is encouraging to tell you the truth, is that he carries most of his weight in his behind and his thighs. And that's what you want for a center or a guard, is the ability to anchor and have a lot of power and push down there. And what I'm getting at here is that he is almost certainly going to be a much better player in 2019 than 18, because he has the type of frame that looks like if he gets in the weight room with the right people, right kind of weight, muscle in his upper body, and if he's going to play guard, that's something he's going to have to do. And so, assuming this is the route they're going, and assuming it is the route, I think the best thing for the Bears is if Koosh beats him out, because Koosh played very well in 2016 before getting hurt in 17. Let Daniels learn the position. Let him spend time in the weight room. Let him develop the kind of body you need to be an NFL offensive guard, because very much to Bob's point, I'm not disputing that he can be a Pro Bowl guard. I don't know. He's a very talented kid, but he doesn't look like it yet. And so I think they've got a lot of work to do with him.
There's no doubt these guys are massive. And I just hope that they are prepared and ready to protect Mitch Trubisky and protect the backfield when need be. And if we can have that, I think Bears fans will be very happy. We move now, actually, speaking of the backfield, we'll move on to talking about some of these running backs. And in Hub, is it possible that Tariq Cohen becomes more valuable than Jordan Howard this season?
Well, anything's possible. I'm going to say not likely, only because the type of plays we saw from Tariq Cohen last year are going to be shared with Taylor Gabriel and even to some extent Trey Burton this year. They will use Cohn, I think, probably very creatively, and I think he can be a huge impact-type player and a difference maker. But at the end of the day, you know, what I keep coming back to is that Matt Nagy's offense, highly creative, explosive, likes these smaller, quicker, athletic players, relies tremendously on speed. But you can't ignore the fact that Kansas City still ran the ball more than they threw it, and that last year they had the leading rusher in the NFL in Kareem Hunt. You know, and in Jordan Howard, you have a much more durable, proven commodity as a runner than Kareem Hunt. I think the concerns about Howard are, you know, that he has not been he hasn't been terrible catching the ball. There's this misconception that he can't catch the ball. He dropped one or two in high-profile situations. I think he'll get better at that. I think he'll learn that. But that's not the strength of his game. Matt Nagy, Mark Helfrich know that when you've got a Pro Bowl running back, and that's what Howard is. I mean, in his 2 years in the league, the only two backs in the NFL with more rushing yards are Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott. You don't waste that. You don't ignore that. So I think Jordan Howard he's still your number one. He's still the more valuable of the two. It's an interesting question you pose, Dan, because in some respects, while I think Tariq Cohen is going to be a lot of fun and a great player and a difference maker, he's almost, Bob, a little less valuable right now because of the addition of Gabriel and Burton and Anthony Miller and these guys, whereas Howard's position in the offense, I really think, is somewhat unchanged.
Yeah, there isn't another bell cow running back, another workhorse, another guy who can pick up third and short and run on the goal line like Jordan Howard does. I think Tariq Cohen, I think they'll use him more effectively this year. I don't know how many more touches he'll get, especially if he's still returning punts and kickoffs full time. I don't know how many more touches he can get on offense and not wear down. Now, he showed no signs of that last year. He's a tough kid, and people refer to him as small. He's short. I wouldn't call him small. He's pretty well put together, and he showed last year he could take some punishment and come back. But, yeah, like you said, they didn't get Taylor Gabriel to sit on the bench, and he can do some of the things that Cohen can do, and, you know, Trey Burton can as well, and you know, we always say there's only one football. Everybody's got to share it. And I think that there will be more opportunities maybe for all of them. And how is that possible? I think they're going to have longer drives this year than they did last year. I think they're going to be able to possess the ball for longer than they were last year and put some drives together. You know, 14, 15 play drives, a lot of guys get to touch the ball. When you're three and out all the time, you really, there's a limit to how much you can do with any of those guys.
We're talking a lot about Cohen. We're talking, obviously, Howard's, you know, poised to be the number one. Do you see Cunningham working out with this system as well?
Well, he was your third down back last year, and he's a good special teams player. He also can and has returned kickoffs. I do think he makes the club this year. But if anybody's role is diminished, it's probably his, because you now know that Tariq Cohen can be as scary a third down back as you're going to find in the NFL. You know, the interesting thing about Cohn is that the one thing you assume you wouldn't do is line up in a one-back offense on third down and then hand him the ball, let him run between the tackles. But he did it last year. He's not afraid to try it. And depending on the defense that you're looking at, it might be effective, you know, not often, but occasionally. And you know he can catch the ball out of the backfield. They definitely have been working with Jordan Howard on catching the ball out of the backfield. So I think that Cunningham has value. I think he'll make the club. But I think he is strictly a third down back. And I think some of those third down opportunities, Bob, will probably go mainly to Cohn, but even occasionally to Howard. And I will tell you right now, with my work for Westwood One on the sidelines of NFL national broadcasts, I did a number of Matt Nagy games. Matter of fact, I did the Chiefs' last two playoff games, unfortunately, the losses. He loves to change it up. And I would almost guarantee you that you're occasionally going to see Trey Burton in the backfield on third down. I mean, there's going to be some different looks. So I think if anybody will probably lose a few opportunities due to the creativity and the explosiveness of Nagy's offense, it could be Benny Cunningham.
The thing about Benny Cunningham, I think he's really an invaluable utility type guy. I don't want to compare him to Ben Zobrist because Ben Zobrist plays almost every day. But Benny Cunningham's a guy who, if they want to take some of the burden off of Tariq Cohen as a return guy, Benny Cunningham can do kick returns. He's done that in the past. He's a guy that the quarterback and the coach trust in third down situations because he's an accomplished blocker. And I think Cohen is better at that than people originally thought he would be because of his size. But Benny Cunningham's a guy you can rely on. A guy can do a lot of different things. He's not going to carry the ball 10 times a game. That's not going to happen. But he's a valuable pass catcher. He definitely catches the ball better than Jordan Howard. I don't know that he doesn't catch better than Tariq Cohen. He's not as explosive, but he may have better hands, and he may be a more reliable guy in the passing game. So he's a guy, yeah, he's not going to get a lot of ink, but he's a guy, he's a valuable role player, and every team needs guys like him.
Let's talk about some of the pass catcher weapons that this team has and how good they're going to be. First and foremost, Allen Robinson. I know that there's a lot of questions in the past about where he's at with his health. How much more of Robinson do we see in camp, and is he healthy enough to fully participate?
Well, I, again, it's kind of like Kyle Long. No, he's not going to fully participate regardless of how healthy he is. I do think that from what we've been able to observe in talking to these guys, he's probably further along than Kyle, if for no other reason than even though it's an ACL that he's rehabbing and that is a 12 to 18 month injury, he's working at 10 or 11 months. The play happened like 3 or 4 minutes into the first game of last season. The surgery was a couple weeks later. So by opening day, he will be close to 12 months from the surgery. Some guys like Adrian Peterson have had remarkable comebacks in 7 or 8 months. Other guys need 18 months. So you look in the middle. I think there's a good chance that Robinson is ready by opening day. He stepped into a few individual drills late in mini camp. He did not run any team 7-on-7 or 11-on-11. I think they'll work him into that slowly during camp in Bourbonnais. I think the goal would probably be to see if he's ready to take a few snaps. And, you know, usually it's the third exhibition game. This year it'll be the fourth exhibition game for the Bears. But, you know, Bob, I think it is, if I had to take odds on which one is more likely to start and play 60 minutes on opening day, I'd probably bet on Robinson ahead of Kyle Long.
Yeah, I think Allen Robinson has a chance to be ready on opening day. But he's another guy. I don't think they're going to rush him. I don't think you'll see him play. I'd be surprised if he played in the first two preseason games. Could he play a lot in the third and fourth games? I think he could. And again, like you mentioned with Kyle Long, it's important to have him ready for the season opener. And I think that there's a very good chance because it'll be almost exactly 12 months. And that's the norm anymore. It didn't used to be that quickly that guys could come back. And keep in mind, Allen Robinson is 25 years old. The recuperative powers at 25 are a lot better than they are at 30 or 35. So I like his chances of being out there opening day, even if they maybe scale back some of his snaps and instead of playing 80, he plays 50 or 55. I think the Bears would be perfectly happy with that scenario.
Bob, if Robinson needs a little more time to rehab, who essentially fills that role? I mean, we know about Taylor Gabriel's versatility. Is this the opportunity for Kevin White to step up and fill that bigger role?
Well, I think two guys, Kevin White and Anthony Miller. Kevin White, if he stays healthy, will be out there. Anthony Miller, if they do want to bring Robinson along slowly, will get an opportunity to play significant snaps as a rookie. And we were talking about the bench press thing earlier. I went back and looked through my notes. Daniels did 21 reps. Anthony Miller did 22. Now, normally you don't want to have your wide receiver out repping your interior lineman, but I don't think that's as much an indictment of James Daniels as it is of Anthony Miller's strength. And this guy brings a lot to the table other than the 191 passes he caught the last 2 years at Memphis. This guy is a willing blocker. He takes pride in that. He's a strong guy. He needs some refinement in his route running, but he's a pretty tough guy after the catch as well. So I think this is a great opportunity. They know what Kevin White can do if he's healthy. So if he's healthy, he's out there. But Anthony Miller will have a great opportunity, especially if they bring Allen Robinson along slowly, to show what he can do and to get some playing time early on in the season.
Hub, who shines at tight end? I mean, we know of Trey Burton's talents. We know of Broniker's talents and Shaheen, of course. Who really is one of those standout tight ends, especially at the receiving?
You know, Dan, I think tight end is going to be one of the more interesting positions in training camp. I have no doubt that Adam Shaheen and Trey Burton make the 53, and I'm 95% sure that Deion Sims does, but he's the guy to keep an eye on. You know, we can go back and look at the Ben Bronickers and Daniel Browns of the world, but at the end of the day, I think the Bears feel like they've got the three tight ends that they want right now. Everybody assumed that Sims was dead man walking because, you know, he didn't emerge last year after his free agent deal, but I'm not sure that Ryan Pace ever saw him really emerging as a difference-making tight end. He is an excellent inline blocker, by far the best of the three. It is important in every NFL offense, regardless of what you're doing. Trey Burton is a receiving tight end. Now, I have talked to some different scouts and coaches and GMs who say that he's not as bad a blocker as you might expect for a guy that small trying to play the position. The description I hear the most often is a willing blocker, which is meant as a compliment, but is sometimes a backhanded compliment. And so I think he'll work at it. But at the end of the day, you know, you get into the fourth quarter of a game, you're trying to put it away and run the football. You're not going to want Trey Burton on the field all that much. That's where you want a Deion Sims. Where this gets really interesting is that Adam Shaheen, who is by far the weakest of the three when we finished last season, I don't know where we'll be when we start this season, is the only one with the size and strength to be a dominating inline blocker, and the Bears believe the athletic ability to be a difference maker as a receiver. So the ideal scenario would be if Shaheen could claim the number one job, be on the field all the time, and then you'd have Burton coming on and off as your new tight end, if you will, your slot guy. He'll go wide, he'll go inside sometimes, he'll be in the backfield. Maybe then you consider the luxury of Deion Sims. The Bears have no cap problems, so they don't have to worry about these decisions. But you know, if Adam Shaheen really starts to emerge and show himself in training camp, maybe Sims is in trouble. Bob, I don't see that happening. I think we're going to go to Lambeau on September 8th with those three as your tight ends, and Sims probably still listed as the starter, and Adam Shaheen still trying to find his spot on the depth chart.
Yeah, Hub, I think you and I have talked about this before, and we're pretty much in agreement. You know, with Shaheen, I never saw the wow factor. I never saw the guy who, not that he was compared to Gronkowski, but I never saw any of that. I didn't really see very often the explosiveness, the ability to stretch the seam down the middle and take the top off of defense. I don't think that's there. I do agree with what you said about him having the skill set and the physical attributes to be a two-way tight end, a guy who is a pretty good receiver, is athletic, and is more than big enough to be an inline blocker. You know, Trey Burton's not knocking anybody off the line as an inline blocker, and they're not going to ask him to. That's not why they got him. And I don't think Trey Burton has to play a ton of snaps at a true tight end position because, as we said, he'll line up in the slots, he'll line up in the backfield, he'll line up split wide sometimes. So there's room in this offense for at least two of those guys to have a significant role. And right now, Deion Sims is a guy who, yeah, you need to have that guy. And even if that's all he is a sixth offensive lineman and an occasional target in the passing game, that's fine. That's fine because Trey Burton can do all those other things. And Shaheen, I'm not writing him off or calling him a bust at this point, but I expected a little more from a second-round pick last year, even though he comes from a small college. And I still think there's the potential for him to be the guy that the Bears thought he was when they drafted him. I just didn't see a lot of evidence of it last year.
A few more minutes here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. And Hub, I want to just take a quick look at special teams. Does anything stand out with this group of guys heading into camp?
Well, you know, Cody Parkey is a pretty significant signing. I'm anxious to see if he's got any, you know, boom in that leg, if you will. There's no question that he's very accurate. I think people need to remember that the word on Robbie Gould the first half of his career was that he was very accurate but didn't have the deep leg. And over the last few years, he's been one of the most successful kickers outside 50 in the NFL. Parkey is young, so he should be fine. I thought it was intriguing that Patrick O'Donnell was only given a one-year deal. He has got as good a leg as any punter in the league. He has struggled to do well in net average. He has struggled with his directional kicking, his situational kicking. I don't think that you know, the camp kickers have much chance of beating him out, but it'll be something we'll keep an eye on. They're thrilled to have Patrick Scales back, you know, as a long snapper. They think he's the guy. And I think that this team, Bob, believes that there's nothing but upside in Tariq Cohen as a returner, you know, and the comparisons to Devin Hester, while unfair, are obvious. You know, they're similar in size and stature. I think Hester was clearly faster. Cohen may be a little quicker. You know, and Chris Tabor, Bob, they've got an experienced special teams coach, a Dave Tobe disciple. So, and you're going to have a lot of young athletes on this team. So I expect the special teams to be in pretty good hands.
Yeah, as far as O'Donnell, it wouldn't shock me to see him not make the team, to see somebody in camp beat him out. You know, he's been around for a while. He's had a lot of chances. He's never really taken the ball and run with it. He's never really been the guy that they thought they were drafting. He flashes for a couple games and then has a couple of bad games. He's been, I think, very inconsistent and has not lived up to expectations. I remember his rookie year in Bourbonnais. You know, he was kicking some balls in practice, and fans were actually on their feet watching him punt the football because he was bombing 80-yard kicks. And that was about the last time we saw that. I think he's been unimpressive to this point, and I could see them going in a different direction. I love Cody Parkey's attitude when somebody pointed out that he's only made 6 kicks of 50 or longer in his career. He said, well, I've only tried 7. So maybe it's just like with Robbie Gould, a situation where he needs to get more opportunities, and then he'll prove that he does have the strong leg. I think they're, yeah, with Tabor, I love that hire. I think they're in great shape there. And Tariq Cohen, he's not Devin Hester, but he does have the quality that Hester did in that when he's on the field as a return guy, you sit up and take notice. You don't go make yourself a sandwich if you're watching on TV. You don't go to the bathroom if you're at the stadium. He keeps you in your seats because there's no, you know, there's no telling what he's going to do. He's a thrill every time he touches the ball. So, yeah, I like their special teams this year much better than they were last year.
Well, guys, it's a lot of exciting stuff for fans to watch with this offense out in Bourbonnais, and I know that you guys will both be out there keeping your eyes on that stuff as well. Hub, any other things to watch with this offense while down there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been pretty, probably maybe too outspoken about my concerns about the left tackle position. I just don't think they're good enough with Charles Leno. He doesn't have any obvious competition there. But with so much focus on the guards, I think we need to keep an eye on that. I think we want to see how a free agent like Earl Watford, who we haven't talked about much, but who can play tackle and guard, works out. I think we want to see some of the youngsters. There's one kid in particular who fascinates me because it was at the rookie mini camp, which he was at on a tryout basis, and he jumped out at me. His name is Jeremy Hall. I want to say South Florida. I forget what school he was from, but he was there just hoping to get an undrafted rookie free agent contract. He's 6'5", 340, and I was watching him move, and I was really impressed, and sure enough, the Bears signed him. And he's now going to be in camp competing. Ryan Pace has done a very nice job with undrafted rookie free agents. When you look back at the Bryce Callahans and the Cam Merediths of the world, to name just a few. I don't know Hall's number off the top of my head, but check it out when you get out there. He's an interesting kid to keep an eye on. And then, you know, other than that, as I said, I think the tight end, and Kevin White, you know, Bob, it's tough to get my arms around Kevin at this point. When he got here, he was open. He was engaging. He was a happy young man. Obviously, these last 3 years have not been good to him. He has now become very reserved, very introspective, if you will, quite frankly, tough to communicate with. He is, as far as we know, 100% healthy. He did not look good to me in Bourbonnais last year when we thought he was 98% healthy before he busted the shoulder in game one. I think we've moved on at this point. I'm not sure you're expecting anything. But the reality is that while Allen Robinson was brought in to be the number one, unless it's Anthony Miller from day one as a rookie, you don't really have a number two on this team. You don't want Taylor Gabriel on the field as your second starting wide receiver. That's not what he does best. And you don't want, in my mind, Josh Bellamy on the field at all at wide receiver. So, you know, Kevin White is going to be interesting to watch. And so I would say Charles Leno, Kevin White, some of the undrafted rookie free agents on the offensive side of the ball, those are my guys to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I would love to see Kevin White stay healthy for an entire season and see what he could do. I think, I don't know that he's still got the 4.35 speed he had when he ran that at the combine. I would guess that he probably is pretty close to that. His most recent injury did not involve the lower body, so that's not a problem there. But the question I have is, he's been on the field for so few games and for so few practices, he's still not what you would call an accomplished route runner. I mean, he was very raw in that regard when he came out of college. So there's still a learning curve for him to become an NFL, an NFL quality route runner. I'd like to see him have an opportunity to stay healthy all through camp and for a full season, and let's see what he can do. He deserves some good help, if nothing else. And, you know, his attitude, you're right, has gotten kind of dicey over the last couple of years, but that's understandable. He's been asked the same questions a billion times, and I think he just preferred to shut his mouth and go out and play and stay healthy. And I think, you know, everybody that was around him when he first came to Chicago would want to see that too, because I think genuinely he is a good kid. He's just kind of got a little chip on his shoulder because of the situation.
Well, guys, that'll do it for this edition of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Bears training camp is underway. As we said, we'll be bringing you the latest camp updates next week with Hub and Bob Laguerre. Be sure to be checking out the latest Bears news as it breaks 24/7 at profootballweekly.com. And we also have an event we want to plug for those Bears fans that will be in the Chicago area on Saturday, September 8th. Be sure to get your tickets for PFW's Football Legends Live at the historic Rouse Center Theater in downtown Crystal Lake. 2018 Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher, Mean Joe Green, Anthony Munoz, Lawrence Taylor, Randy White, and Dan Hampton, plus some other possible Bears players, former players, PFW crew. Everybody will be on stage discussing our Pro Football Weekly team for the ages and sharing stories from the NFL, so it should be a fun night. And you can buy those tickets now at profootballweekly.com. Hub, what would you say? That's probably going to be a good time.
Well, I certainly hope so. We're really excited about it. I know you rattled off a few names, but the list of NFL Hall of Famers that will be with us on September, I guess it's September 8th. I keep getting my days wrong. It's that Saturday night before the opener at Lambeau. But we're going to have Anthony Munoz there. We're going to have Joe Green and Randy White and Dan Hampton and Lawrence Taylor. All Hall of Famers. We're going to have a number of the 85 Bears, some other NFL surprises for folks. We're going to have all of the best known or at least most visible members of the media in Chicago out as well. We expect 600 or 700 people to pack the theater. It's just going to be an absolutely great night, and I hope to see as many of our listeners as possible.
And Bob Laguerre will be there too.
Well, I said, you know, most of the best known and most impressive media in town. Starts with the gear. And then you plug in Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish.
That's right.
And, of course, from our TV show, we will have Pat Boyle. I'm sure Dan Pompey will join us, although I got to confirm that with Danny if he's in town. I suspect you'll agree with this. I always tend to tell people about the athletes that will be there, because I don't know why anybody would want to come and see me. But we're going to have both, the best-known athletes and the best-known media.
I'm sure people will be much more interested in seeing the athletes than the media, but we're used to that by now.
Well, guys, we want to thank you all for listening this week, and we hope that you head on over to iTunes to subscribe to this podcast if you've not already done so. Once again, a big thanks to Humphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Glory, which you can download on iTunes if you enjoy listening to that track each week.